Monday we were discussing what is the melacha, the forbidden activity of tochin, which is grinding, or we saw as an extension of that, it was really cutting. The Gemara discussed the fact that just to cut into smaller pieces itself would also be a violation. And we addressed one basic issue there, which is that how far do we take this? We're going to see that there are many limitations in terms of this, which we'll get to probably next week. But in terms of just cutting itself, how far does this go? Because then you can't cut your food. You won't be able to cut your food. What does it mean that cutting is forbidden? Especially, I mean, you have to go to the source. The source is grinding. It's about grinding itself, which is a significant action where you're taking one object, one entity, and you're now dissolving it into, or you're turning it into many very small, fine pieces, so you could call that a significant change. So, just like all the other malachas, we have to figure out what is viewed as a significant change just by cutting. If you cut your fish into smaller pieces, is that viewed as significant or not? To violate tochein, what exactly has to occur in order for this to be viewed as significant? And we presented different ideas within the Rishonim. Tosfos says that the only time that you violate tochin, grinding, when it comes to food, is only when it comes to beets. Remember, he said that with regards to silka, the case in the Gemara says silka, and Tosfos there says that it's only with regards to beets, it doesn't apply to any other food. Now, it's probably beets and whatever the reason is for beets and the like. I doubt it's just beets, and that's the only food that you can apply tochin to, but it's whatever the characteristics of beets, whatever that characteristic is, it would apply to any similar food, that, right? Which shares in its characteristics. So, what was unique about beets? So, we did see one opinion which said that that cutting it helps within the process of it becoming edible. That it goes from cutting it, it doesn't complete the process. You then have to cook it, but it helps within that process, and so therefore it's part of a process that goes from inedible to edible, and that's what makes it significant. We also saw the Rambam, which is one of the two sources that we saw is quoted here, where the Rambam says that it's not just cutting, but it's cutting levashlo, to then cook it. So the cutting itself might not have to be going from inedible to edible, but at least it's cutting within a process. It's then to cook. So if it's within a process, so then it makes it significant. It's part of a process to then cook it, so then it becomes significant. So I'm not sure if it's specifically to cook, or it could be just part of a process to then do something else to it. When it comes to food, it's to cook. When it comes to other things, it's not necessarily to cook. But as long as it's within a process, that makes cutting significant.
So would you say it's a process of enhancing it? In whatever way that particular item...
Either enhancing it or changing it. I would
changing
say
its state.
It has to be
changing.
A positive...
I would assume it has to be positive. Yeah, I would assume it does have to be positive just because of melechas machshavas. It has to be a constructive act. So, yeah, I think you're right. It's a process where it, in a positive way, it changes its state. In the end of the day, it'll change its state in a significant way. Now, that's a vague... each case you would have to figure out, is this a change, and is this a significant change? But at least that's the broad definition of tochin, let's say, according to the Rambam. We did see at the very end, we saw that the Yerushalmi, and it's not just the Yerushalmi, but it's many Rishonim, they hold that, the Yerushalmi says that it could even be when it's edible. It's not limited like what Tosa says and what the other opinion, the Ra'a says, that it's specifically when it goes from inedible to edible. The Yerushalmi says clearly that it applies to edible food entities. It includes garlic. The case of the Yerushalmi was garlic. And so tochin does apply to garlic. And so within that, you have to understand, well, so now what makes cutting significant if it applies also to garlic? So you could say that it's in order to cook, although the Yerushalmi does not say that. The Yerushalmi does not say that it has to be specifically in order to cook. But there are those that explain that tochin is really only a problem when you cut it into such small pieces that it's sort of parallel to grinding. It's not exactly grinding. Perhaps it's a little bigger than that. But if you're cutting it into very small pieces, so then that causes a significant change where this is no longer called, a cucumber. This is now diced up cucumber. This
it's
is
not garlic, it's minced garlic.
Yeah, something like that. It's very, very small, such that it causes a significant change. So it doesn't have to be a significant change because it's part of a process where it goes from inedible to edible. It could even be when it's edible. But the point is that it has such a significant change because you cut it up into such thin, fine slices.
Well, if not inedible to edible, at least inusable to usable. Because, correct me if I'm wrong, but nobody ever uses garlic at whole. You only ever use garlic as minced or very finely cut up.
In its raw state, yes.
Yeah. You wouldn't take a bite out of a garlic.
Yeah, but they seem to extend it. There are those that extend tochin even when it's usable. Okay. You're right. For garlic, it might be an idea of inusable to usable.
Would you do it like for another root vegetable, like a carrot?
Yeah, so they would extend it to things that it would be. The Rishonim, the earlier commentators, do extend it to a carrot, which is edible in its raw state,
right?
Without cutting it up, even without cutting it up. So
now it is, but never used to be.
Now it is, but it never used to be.
According to Rabbi Weinberg, carrots were not edible.
It's not just Rabbi Weinberg, it was the Gemara.
Yeah, that's right. According to Rabbi Weinberg in Brachas.
Yeah.
You don't say a bracha on a food which is inedible. So if you ate a carrot raw in those days.
Yeah, so it was inedible, yeah.
Right?
Correct.
Yeah.
If you ate a carrot raw in those days, you never said a bracha.
I mean, they discuss vegetables that are edible, whether it's been cooked already, just to cut it up after it's been cooked, or whether it's edible even prior to cooking it. The earlier commentators, they do discuss the fact that there would be a problem with tochin even in such a scenario. So it seems to be that it's not just inusable to usable, but it's just if you cut it up into such what's called dak-dak, or ma'at-ma'at, that it's into very thin slices, so then that would be the problem, because that's viewed as a significant change. When it comes to very thin slices, so then that's a significant change. And just to show you an example of that, is if you go to, I'm just going to skip to source 3. We did source 1 last week, or Monday, sorry. If you go to source 3, it's Tosos, which is on the top of page 2, he's discussing the fact that you're allowed to cut up vegetables on Yom Kippur. This is what the Gemara is discussing. You're allowed to cut up vegetables on Yom Kippur, but you're not allowed to do that on Shabbos. On Yom Kippur, they said it's permissible to cut it up later in the afternoon on Yom Kippur to prepare for the breakfast, to prepare for that meal. And he says it's not a problem. And then within that context, Tosa says as follows. He says, Velo dummy, but maybe it should be prohibited for the following reasons, even on Yom Kippur. Velo dummy, lahad da amar periklal gadol, haiman de parm silka chai mishim tochin, because we know that there's a problem of tochin, of grinding. So he says, no, that's different. Da hasa mairi kishosa chatichos dakos ma'od. He says, over there, the reason why it's prohibited is because you cut it up into pieces which are dakos ma'od, which are very thin slices. That's when it's prohibited. On a biblical level. Here, you're cutting it up in such a way, on Yom Kippur, where it's permitted, you're cutting it up where it's bigger pieces. These are bigger pieces, and so then it's permissible. So he's discussing clearly, I think it's clear, but perhaps you could argue the other way, but these are vegetables which are currently edible. Perhaps you can make the claim that they're not, but I think we would assume that they are edible. But yet, there's a prohibition to cut them up into dakos ma'od, and to make very thin slices, that would be a problem. That would be a prohibition. Okay, so that's what Tosa says. So Tosa clearly extends it to vegetables. So I want to get to some of the halacha l'maisa, which will also they'll help us to explain which opinion they hold like amongst the various opinions that we've seen in the Rishonim. But just to see source 2, the Trumas Hadeshen, he has the following case, which is brought down lahalacha. This is brought down. The Trumas Hadeshen has the following question. He says, "Mishe inu yachal lilos." In page 1, in source 2, "Mishe inu yachal lilos yafa bishina." If a person can't chew well, "V'yesh lefan of basar she'ena rach." Kigon tzlishu kasha lilos. He has a hard piece of meat in front of him, right? And he can't chew that piece of meat. He has roasted meat in front of him. It's very difficult for him to chew. Shari lei lichto chabasa b'shabes dak dak b'sakim v'le'ochlo acherkach olav. So he asks the following question. He asks, are you allowed to cut it up into very thin pieces with your knife and then to eat it, or is it not permissible? Right? So for you, it's an interesting question here, because for you personally, you have a hard time chewing. Mm-hmm. You have a hard time chewing personally. So for me, this piece of meat is not edible. For everybody else, or let's say for most of the world, it's fine. Right. They could eat it. But for me personally, I have a hard time eating this. So is it permissible for me to cut it up into thin slices or not? Mm-hmm. That's the question. Is it permissible or not? So he, within his answer, he says the following. He says as follows. He says, Ikel Memar. You could say as follows. Dahadi tira tosas litlan ochlin. That which tosas allows you to cut up food. Why is that? Haine mishum de ein tzarech tchina. Di bai ochalei kemoshi ushalim. Vayeloso ben chinov. Avil ilo haitaima lo. He says that when tosas says it's permissible to cut up food, that's only when cutting it up does not help you. It's edible even without cutting it up. If I have a piece of steak in front of me,
It doesn't change anything.
I don't need to cut up the steak. I don't really have, it's, you know, might be proper etiquette. But but if I wanted to, I could go have my steak and stick the fork inside and just eat straight off the steak, right? I don't have to cut it up into pieces. I could eat it that way. I don't have to cut it up. So that's when it's permissible, because the cutting does not change anything. It doesn't impact anything. But if you have such a person where they really have to cut it up in order to eat it, they can't chew properly, so they have to cut it up into very small pieces in order for them just to swallow it, so then that would be prohibited. That itself would be prohibited, because the cutting it up creates a significant change whereby it goes from inedible to edible. Here,
in a subjective sense.
This is subjective, right. So there's an added point here that it's even on a subjective level. Even on a subjective level, it would be prohibited.
Unless you take the position that the cutting is an extension of his teeth.
Yeah.
Non-teeth.
The cutting is an extension of his non-teeth.
Yeah, it's like a guy with, you know, uses a cane on Shabbat.
Yeah.
It's an extension of his leg.
Miyad. Like we just said for Borer.
You're saying this is really just part of his eating. That this would be whole. You could argue that it's part of his eating.
Yeah.
Okay, it's an interesting idea. He clearly does not hold like that, but right. It is an interesting idea that you'd say that this is viewed as part of his eating. Okay, I can. So he clearly disagrees, but I could hear that point as well. But he's assuming that even on a subjective level, just to cut it up, that would be a problem. Mm-hmm. Fine. That would seemingly be a problem.
And Rabbi, maybe the distinction between Jeff's case and what is being talked about here in Tosafos is, if you take your fork and knife and cut a little piece and eat it, take your fork and knife, cut a little tiny piece.
And that's what he's discussing here, a very small piece, yeah.
Well, I don't think he's talking about that. I think what
he says you cut it dak bisakin. You cut it into very small pieces with your knife.
To eat it afterwards is the English translation.
He does say v'lochlo acharkach. I'm not sure what he means by eating. I'm not sure if eating means swallowing or eating means chewing and swallowing. I'm not sure what you're getting at here. But
well, what I'm thinking is, if he ends up taking his lovely steak, which has been overcooked, and he's not going to be able to chew it.
Yeah.
So he's going to take it and cut it all into tiny little pieces, and then he's going to put it onto his plate, and then he's going to eat it. Is a different sort of scenario, perhaps, than having a steak on the plate, and instead of just because he can't cut normal size pieces,
right.
And because that will require him to chew. So right. What he has to do is cut tiny little pieces and then just eat them.
You're saying, are you trying to differentiate between whether there's an added stage in between of putting it on your plate?
Is that some sort of it sounds like the serving that he's going to have is already going to be tiny little cut up pieces, so he can just swallow them, as opposed to sitting there and very carefully just taking a very tiny little thin piece at a time,
And
putting it in his mouth.
So you're saying which case would be prohibited, which case would be permissible?
So in the case of pre-cutting a whole bunch of little tiny pieces,
that would be prohibited.
That's what Joseph thinks of dressing. But the extension of the chewing...
You're saying based on Jeff's logic.
I think that both can stand. If Jeff's teeth extension is just taking one tiny little bit at a time, because that's just an act.
Perhaps, yeah. And we'll get to this, whether there's... Whether it becomes permissible when it's what we call altar, just like we have at Bora, when it's for right away.
Right.
We do for right away. So we'll get to all this. This will be part of the limitations. There are a lot of limitations for this.
What's the word you use for right away?
Altar. Altar is it means right away. It's like miyad.
Yeah,
it's equivalent to miyad immediately when it's for right away. So. How do we paskin in terms of this? Well, what's the psak halacha for this? So if you go to source 4 on page 2, the Shulchan Aruch and Ramah, they say as follows. The Shulchan Aruch says, "Hamechate chayarek dak dak chay mishum tofen." He says that when you cut up vegetables, dak dak. So it's also important to mention. He says dak dak into very small pieces. He doesn't say just to cut up vegetables. He says to cut up vegetables into very small pieces. Then you have violated tochen. That's the violation of tochen, of grinding. The Ramah adds, v'hu hadin, the same law is true, it's also forbidden, lachtoch grogros v'charuvim lifnei zekenin. It's also forbidden to cut carob, that's what he's discussing, carob, for the zekenin, for older people. So this is, it's an interesting, what exactly is the Ramah doing here? The Shulchan Aruch first says that cutting up vegetables is a problem. Now, when he says to cut up vegetables, he does not differentiate between whether it's edible or inedible beforehand. Right. The Shulchan Aruch does not make any differentiation between that. So the simple understanding of the Shulchan Aruch, which I think is also what the Shulchan Aruch means, is that it applies regardless. It always applies with regards to vegetables. As long as you cut it up, dak, into very fine, thin slices, so then that would be a problem even if it's edible beforehand. It doesn't have to go from edible to from inedible to edible. Even if it's edible beforehand, just to cut it up into thin slices would be a problem. What's the Ramah doing? What is the Ramah doing? The Ramah says, oh, by the way, it's also prohibited to cut it up in front of older people. So the question is, why is he mentioning older people here? What's the reason? Why is he mentioning older people? He should just say that it's also prohibited to cut up carob. Why does he have to say lifnei zekenim in front of the older people? So one could have said, any suggestions? Why would he say the older people?
Because it's making something that was inedible
for them. So you could have said exactly this. You could have said that maybe he says it's for older people because that's a case where it's going from inedible to edible. On a subjective level, it's going from inedible to edible. So maybe the Ramah is holding like that opinion that we just saw, the Trumas Hadeshen, that even on a subjective level will be prohibited if you go as long as you're going from inedible to edible. So that's perhaps what you could have said. I believe it's the Bir Halacha, who's the Mishnah Brura. He says, don't say that. I know you could have said that, but don't say that. He says, and I'll explain why it seems pretty clear that you shouldn't say that. But he first says, why does he say in front of older people? Because that's the case that you do this for. He says that for other people, it just wouldn't apply. Let them go ahead and eat it. The only time that this would apply, that you have to cut up a carob, would be for older people, because it's true. For them, it's going from inedible to edible, so you have to cut it up for them. But that doesn't mean that it's limited to such a case. It just happens to be that that's the case where it's normal. The normal case of cutting it up into small pieces is when you're dealing with older people. But not that it's limited to such a case. And how could you prove that? You could prove that because the Ramah's, what's the Ramah's first two words are v'hu adin. V'hu adin, he says, the law also applies. What's also? Also implies that he agrees to what the Shulchan Aruch is saying. He agrees to what the Shulchan Aruch is saying, but he's adding to what the Shulchan Aruch just said. So the Shulchan Aruch just said that there's a prohibition to cut up yerek, to cut up vegetables, regardless of whether it's edible or inedible. The Shulchan Aruch doesn't comment on that. So it seems to be that regardless of whether it's edible or inedible, comes the Ramban and says it's also forbidden to do such and such. So the fact that he says it's also forbidden implies that he agrees to the Shulchan Aruch's line that it would be a prohibition. Fine. So the Ramban and the Shulchan Aruch, they seem to paskin that it's still prohibited even if it's edible beforehand. Even if it's edible beforehand, that's how we paskin, right? That's what the Shulchan Aruch says. The Egle Tal is one of the big sfarim on the laws of Shabbos. The Egle Tal, he's the Avni Nezer, a later Achron. So he asks on the Shulchan Aruch, he says, there seems to be a contradiction within the Shulchan Aruch. Because over here he's saying that it's prohibited when it goes from
inedible.
It's prohibited even if it's from edible to inedible. One second. Sorry. Let's read the next. It's based off the next Shulchan Aruch. So let's read the next Shulchan Aruch in source 5. The next Shulchan Aruch says as follows. It says, Mutter lachtoch basar mevushel o tli dak dak b'sakim. It is permissible to cut cooked or roasted meat into very thin slices. That is permissible. Right? So that itself is permissible. Right? The Shulchan Aruch says that to cut up meat into thin slices is permissible. The Ramah now comments and says, Aval asr lach doch dak dak basar chai lifnei ha'ofos, ho'ol ve'inan yicholon la'ochlo belo chituch kamashvi lei ocha. So they say it's permissible to cut up meat. The Ramah comes along and he says, but there's a prohibition to cut up meat, which is raw, to serve to your ofos, to your chickens. Why? Because since it's not edible for the chickens prior to cutting it, and through cutting it, you're turning it into food. So then, there is going to be a prohibition. Right? So the Ramah here says that when is it prohibited to cut up meat? When it's raw. And it's required to cut it to make it edible for the chickens. For the chickens, before cutting it, it would be inedible. You now have to cut it up and it becomes edible. So that is a prohibition.
So it's any time that's going from inedible to edible.
Well, we just said it shouldn't make a difference. If you go back to the previous Shulchan Aruch, it doesn't make a difference whether it's edible or inedible. In all cases of vegetables, there's a problem with cutting it up into small pieces. All of a sudden, over here, in the next halacha, it says that, well, first of all, you're allowed to cut up if it's cooked meat. And the Ramah says, but there's a prohibition if it's going from inedible to edible. So this is very strange. In the previous halacha, he says that it makes no difference. Whether it's inedible or edible, or whether it's completely edible, it's completely allowed. It's completely prohibited, sorry, in the first case. For vegetables, whether it's edible or not, it's prohibited. In the second case, when it comes to the meat, the Ramah says that it's only going to be prohibited when it goes from inedible to edible, on a subjective level, even on a subjective level. If it goes from inedible to edible, that's when it's prohibited. But otherwise, it would be completely permissible. To cut up meat would be completely permissible. Mm-hmm. So this seems to be a contradiction between the two cases in the Shulchan Aruch. When he discusses vegetables, he says that it's always prohibited, whether it's edible or not, prior to cutting it. And then the second case, when it comes to the meat, the Ramah says that it's only prohibited when it goes from inedible to edible. Okay? So that's the question. Everyone got the question?
Yeah.
What's the difference between these two?
Veggies, yeah. And the meat.
And the meat. So we're going to get to this either next week or the week after, that one of the limitations to tochein is that it has to be only things that come from the ground. Hmm. Only that which comes from the ground. It can only apply to things that come from the ground. And meat, we don't view as coming from the ground. Meat comes from the animal, even though, depending on the case, I think this is also something which we've discussed in the past,
yeah,
whether an animal is called coming from the ground or not because it gets its nourishment from the ground. Mm-hmm. It eats from the grass, from the ground. Mm-hmm. So we had that whole discussion, but at least with regards to this case, the meat is not viewed as coming from the ground. But when it comes to the vegetables do come from the ground. Now, this does not solve everything. Because If that were to be the case, so then how could the Rama then go ahead and say that when you have meat and you're serving it to your chickens and it's inedible, to go from inedible to edible, that that's a prohibition?
Well, because maybe the Rama is saying that when it comes to things that grow from the ground, you don't have to worry about a change in status, a change in significance.
Okay.
It's just about making it smaller. But when it comes to things that don't grow from the ground, then the issue of significant change becomes...
Excellent. Ah, so that's exactly also what the Egli Tal says when he explains this. That's excellent. So what Jeff is saying, what the Egli Tal is saying, is that when it comes to cutting something which comes from the ground, that doesn't require a significant change of going from inedible to edible. Now, I might embellish, I'm not sure if you said this or not, but just cutting alone into thin slices for something which comes from the ground itself is already viewed as a significant change. That itself is a significant change. Why? Why is that a significant change? So, as we've been going through the malachos, we've been going in order of the malachos of where you start by planting and then cutting, and you go through all these different stages. And I think we did discuss this as well in the past, that we're dealing with entities which they have a history, they have a life, where the food the vegetables have a life of where it was planted and then grown, and then you harvest it and you take it off, and now it's on your plate. So what's the end of that process? So that's also something which we've discussed in the past. But to cut it up into thin slices, you are now completely changing that whole vegetation process. That vegetable is now completely changing, where it's into very thin slices, that now you've gone through the whole process and now you're completely changing it. You're completely changing that entity. So when you have food which is vegetation, so it went through that process and now you're completely changing it, that itself is significant on its own. Just to cut it up into very thin slices, that would be a problem on its own. When it comes to meat, on the other hand, that's not significant on its own to cut it up into thin slices. That would not be viewed as significant, that would not be a problem. The only time it is a problem is when it goes from inedible to edible. Mm-hmm. If it goes from inedible to edible, then that's viewed as a significant change. So then that would be a problem. That would be prohibited. Mm-hmm. But the underlying principle here is that the only time that it's a problem is when you cause a significant change. Now, how to define a significant change depends on what we're dealing with, on what type of food is it, and that could change from food to food. Whether it's vegetables or whether it's meat, how to define what is a significant change would depend on the food item. But the underlying principle here is that in order for there to be a problem with tochin, it has to be a significant change. Okay. What we'll deal with now, for the remaining 10 minutes or so, is discuss when we have to cut it up into thin slices, what exactly does that mean? How thin is thin? So that's what we'll discuss now. Another thing to keep in mind, which is also important, is that we also have one of the other 39 malachos is, besides for tochim, besides for grinding, is to cut, just to be chotich, is another one of the 39 malachos. Chaticha is one of the 39 malachos, which is cutting. And you have to ask, what's the difference between the two? Mm-hmm. What's the difference between grinding and chotich, which is just cutting? So when or if we get to chotech, so that has its own limitations, and that might be about an exact measurement or something like that. Maybe only cutting it when it has an exact measurement, which is that has many major ramifications for Shabbos, that you're not supposed to cut for exact measurements. Over here, the focus seems to be not on an exact measurement, but it's more on cutting it into very fine, thin pieces. So what exactly is thin? So let's look at source 6. So source 6 is the Rush, a classic earlier commentator. He says, HaTochin, Amar Papa, Haiman, Depar, Mesilko, B'Shabbos, Chai, Mishim, Tochin. He's quoting the Gemara. The Gemara says that if you cut up Silka, which is the beets, on Shabbos, then you have violated Tochin. Now he quotes two opinions here. Perish Rabbeinu Chananel, he quotes Rabbeinu Chananel, who says, Atzei dekalim she'omdim tichi tichi k'ein nimin shekshemefarik hanimin halalu yotze mibeneihem kamo kemach dak l'fichach hamenavtzo chayev mishim tochin. Rabbi Yochanan understands that how thin does it have to be? So he has a big leniency here in terms of the practical halacha. He says it has to be so thin that it's very, very, like, it becomes like fine flour. The only time you violate tochen is when it turns into very fine flour or the like, where it's very, very fine flour. And that's the time where that's viewed as a significant change, because then you can understand how that's a significant change. To grind flour, it becomes into very, very small pieces. So the Rosh says, v'perish hagunhu, this is correct. He agrees with this opinion. Dumya desal silti, comparable to the wood shavings. The other case in the Gemara was cutting it up into wood shavings, so that's also into very small pieces. So it has to be extremely, extremely small. It's not slices, we're not dealing here with slices, but we're dealing here with, like, really to grind it up where it turns into very small pieces. And that's what Rabbi Nochanal says. But then he quotes Rashi. Umashi perish Rashi, the parm silka, shemechatech yirakos dak dak. Rashi understands that you cut them up into thin slices. He says, perish tamuhu. He doesn't understand this. Davarshu ochal, umechatech also dak dak, ain't shaf beitchina, something which is food. And then you just cut it up into slices. He says, tochin should not apply in such a situation. In such a scenario, we don't apply tochin to that, because it has to be specifically very thin. Not thin, but it has to be turned into pieces, really. It has to turn into very small pieces, as opposed to just thin slices. So what exactly is that dispute? Whether it's thin slices or whether it's just like flour, where it's very small pieces. So there's a dispute here whether it's thin slices or small pieces. So it seems to be it's a dispute about how significant of a change is needed. We need it to have a significant change. So how far do you have to go in terms of making that significant change? So do you have to make it into very small pieces, like flour? That's viewed as a significant change. Or just to cut it up into thin slices, that would be enough. That seems to be the dispute between these two opinions. Is it very small pieces or is it thin slices?
The argument we've used in other suggestions is if you change its nature almost. Like when if you've got a big piece of bread,
like
and the bread gets soaked into your soup,
yeah,
and you eat that soup with a big piece of bread in it, you're still saying what's on that bread?
Correct, and because then it didn't
done,
change.
You've changed, well,
it didn't have a fundamental change, right?
I think if it's got all, if the bread's become like mush in the soup.
If it's mush, yeah. If it changes its tzura, if it changes its form.
So
shape.
That kind of,
yeah, so that would be similar to this. Oh, fine. So you're adding that if it's necessary to violate tochen, you have to turn it into like flour. So then that's completely changing its form.
Right.
That's a complete change in its form, and that's viewed as a significant change. To just cut it up into thin slices, into thin pieces, so then that would not be viewed as a change in form, and that would be the dispute whether you need a change in form or not. Okay, yeah, that's a better way of putting it.
But if the slice is still identifiable as what it had been before, then you haven't really changed its form.
Then you haven't really changed its form, yeah. The way we paskin, is that it has to be even just thin pieces would violate tochen.
Uh-huh.
Even thin pieces. It doesn't have to be the grinding to the extent that it becomes like flour.
Right.
It doesn't have to be to that extent.
Thin slices?
So we'll explain now exactly how far you go. How big does it have to be for it to be permissible? Let's put it that way. How big does it have to be for it to be permissible? So there are two opinions with regards to this. And there are two sides for this. The Mincha Shlomo has an interesting way of putting it. He says it has to be big enough that I still have to chew it. If it's big enough where I still have to chew it, so then it's permissible.
Right.
If you cut it up to the extent where, if you pre-chewed it, essentially, can imagine like advertisements, pre-chewed. If you cut it up where you don't have to chew it, so then that's prohibited. Which is an interesting way of formulating it, because like what Dez said, it has to be, according to the first opinion, the Ravina Chananel, it has to be a complete change in its form. According to the second opinion, it has to be a significant change. So what qualifies as a significant change? So according to him, what qualifies as a significant change is if I've cut it up to the degree where I don't have to chew it anymore. I can just swallow it. That's called a significant change.
Right.
I've used my knife became my teeth.
Right.
That it replaced my teeth, and I cut it up to the degree where I don't have to chew it anymore. That's significant. That's viewed as significant enough where I violate tochen. This is a very big kula, a leniency with regards to tochen. That means any time I cut it up into bigger than just any time that it requires me chewing it, so then that would be permissible. That would be completely permissible. The other opinion is the Chazon Ish and others. They say that it goes based on the norm of cutting. It has to be bigger than what's normal. Bigger than what's normal, which is how most paskin,
right.
That when you have to cut slightly larger pieces than what's normal. If it's
so
normal,
you're making your Israeli salads with the cucumbers and your tomatoes, and you normally make them with a certain size little cube.
Yeah.
So if you're doing it Shabbos morning, you want to make it a whole chunk bigger. So it's bigger.
You make it a little bit. You have to make it slightly bigger.
Bigger than that you would normally.
Slightly bigger. So what's the logic behind this? What's the logic behind this? So what is defined as a significant change? A significant change ultimately becomes whatever is viewed as your normal cutting. I mean, it would depend on each food item would be different. What's viewed as normal would be different for each thing. But whatever is viewed as normal to cut this would be viewed as the significant change. If it's normal to cut it in such a way, so if you did that action, so then that's viewed as a significant change because that's what you normally do. To do more, to make bigger pieces than that, to make
in effect,
larger slices,
to do less.
Which is essentially doing less. The bigger it is, then you're accomplishing less. So then that becomes permissible. Because that's not tochen. That's not viewed as a significant change. But for me to do exactly the norm, what I would usually do, so then that would be viewed as a significant change. So you have a dispute here whether a significant change is when I cut it up to the degree where I don't have to chew it anymore, or whether it's just I have to cut it up where it's just the normal way that I were to cut it up. That would be the two ways of understanding it. And I think most paskin like the second way.
And who are the authors of the two positions again?
The first one was the Minch was sort of Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, and the second one is the Chazon Ish.
So you can't make an Israeli salad in Shabbos.
No, you could. You have to make slightly bigger pieces.
I'm interested in the first position.
But we'll also see. Oh, yeah. We'll see that there's a lot of limitations. This is
okay.
Stay tuned. Don't leave.
How do we paskin? Like the second, like the Chazon Ish.
I think most paskin like the second. Yeah. But the first one would be a major leniency.
I'm interested in the first one because I had this in my mind and I've lost it. But that if a person, I mean, basically what they're saying is you can't do outside your mouth what you do inside your mouth.
You can't do outside your mouth, exactly, yeah. You can't do the action, even though what's inside your mouth is permissible.
Right.
Even though what you do inside
so
your mouth is permissible.
So the guy that doesn't have teeth,
what's the story?
You'd think it would be permissible.
The guy that doesn't have teeth.
Because you're just, so, as I said before, you're just allowing him to put his teeth outside. You
know, yeah, so that I'm not sure about. I hear where you're coming from, but I'm just not sure if we have that svara, that way of understanding it, that you could have your teeth go outside.
Okay.
well, if you take that same, because it became very subjective anyway. Like, as long as the guy still has to chew it, it's fine. Basically, right?
He has to chew it.
So
then it's permissible.
So that becomes very subjective. So the guy without teeth, even if you cut very finely sliced pieces for him, he's going to be gumming away on those things, on those pieces anyway.
Okay.
No, he could just swallow it. He could just swallow it. I will say, though, the fact that you're thinking in this way, that you could have your teeth just chew outside your mouth, I think shows how far we've gone in these classes, that you're able to think in these terms.
Sure.
That
well, I'm just drawing from something I heard about how it may be permissible for a person who relies on a cane to walk to use a cane on Shabbos.
And there's no air.
In the absence of an air.
In the absence of an air, yeah. That's where you're coming from,
yeah.
That's where you're coming from. Okay, so I take back my comment.
Also with Borat, you said it was, you could use a fork because that was an extension of your hand. And
this is where, so that I agree to. Just to conclude, The Bir Halacha does point out, this is the first source here, the Bir Halacha says that it's unclear to know what exactly is viewed as a big piece versus a smaller piece, which is hard for us to know. And so he says, therefore, you can rely on it, but you should always do it. The Bir Halacha says that you should combine it with another heter, which is that you should do it right before you eat. So if you do it right before you eat, because we don't know what's viewed as big versus small, it's just it's unclear, so just do it right before you eat. So he combines the two. But we'll get to a lot of these practical issues next week and in the future. Yeah, that